B-Pod Studios.
Farzetta and Trey in the morning.
From the Inquirer, ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Mike Sielski. Mike, where do you stand on bathroom conversation?
Yeah, where's your column on that, Mike?
I generally keep things quiet when I'm in the men's room, and I'll leave it at that.
Well, that's because you're a decent human. I've known you for a long time there, Mike Sielski. You're a decent human being, and you know the conversations end, especially at the urinal.
Yeah, you know, and the other, no playing with the cell phone at the urinal either. You know, that's just fraught with risk, you know?
In so many ways, Mike. We have Mike Sielski here from the Inquirer. Mike, you've been writing some great stuff. I do want to get into this because this is pretty wild. You've been you had a conversation recently with Zaire Smith, and we've all been paying attention to the Summer League. We'll get more in depth there. How's Zaire Smith doing? Trying to come back from a wild kind of unhealthy rookie season.
Yeah, I mean, gosh, the kid lost what 40 pounds over like 8 months because of a. An allergic reaction to sesame. He almost died. He could have died. And, you know, he's back. We got to see him a little bit. Obviously, we've got to see him in the Summer League. Got to see him at the Summer League camp last week. He looks, you know, in terrific shape. And what's interesting to me is everybody who talks about him, who has seen him play, raves about him. Of course, nobody really in the Philadelphia area has seen him play. I mean, he played what? 8 games last season for the Sixers, 2 of them in the playoffs, you know, didn't see any action till the end of the season. And he's somebody who they need to be part of their rotation, not necessarily, you know, come playoff time, but over the course of the regular season, he needs to get minutes and he needs to play well for them to add depth, to a team that needs it after its starting five. So, you know, I've talked to Chris Beard, his coach at Texas Tech. You talk to people within the Sixers organization, they all rave about him. And, of course, Brett Brown compared him to Kawhi Leonard on draft night when the Sixers got him in that trade from the Suns. So I'm really curious to see, you know, how he fares this coming season.
Has he gained the weight back?
It looks like he has, yeah. He looks very athletic. He told me when I talked to him last week, in his first, you know, workout back after missing all that time, he tried to dunk. And it did not go well. That was his exact
wow.
But, you know, he moves around very well. You know, in practice, his shot seems very smooth. You know, there isn't a whole lot. There isn't a very big sample size with him because he only played the 1 year at Texas Tech. He took, I think, 43 point shots. He did shoot, I think, 45% on those 40 shots. And 40 isn't a whole lot. So I think they look at him as having a whole lot of upside. And, you know, if you're the Sixers, you have to hope that this kid bucks the trend of, you know, first round picks who come in and you know, perform you know, in the first chance they get, because it's not been good.
Yeah, and that's what worries me a little bit, Mike, is when he played in high school, he was a 6'4 center on his team. He goes to college and he's a 6'4 power forward. Like he relies on strength and jumping ability. And when you lose all that weight, when you have the type of sickness or ailment that he had, that's what you're basically building back up. It's not like you're rehabbing a hamstring, a knee, whatever. You're rebuilding strength. Do you think he's fully recovered strength-wise in that way?
Yeah, I do. And even if he's not, Bobby, I mean, he's only 20. You know, there's going to be time for him to get to NBA strength, too. I mean, to me, that was always my theory about Markel Fultz, was always that the yips that he contracted shooting the ball were born first and foremost from the fact that at age 20, he was not physically strong enough yet to be in the NBA. And it kind of freaked him out a little bit. Like, all those moves that he had been able to make in high school and in college, he was now getting bumped and kind of body checked and getting an elbow on the solar plexus from men. And all of a sudden it's, oh, I can't do what I used to do. And that's, if you read up on mental blocks in athletes, that's kind of where those things start. They can't do physically what they used to be able to do. So as long as Zaire keeps his head clear and understands kind of where he's supposed to be and all that, I think he'll be okay in that regard. You know, I like I said, he's so young and he's still got a long way to mature, but they're very high on where he is even right now.
Mike, what do you see their style of play being like this year? Do you think there will be a drastic change? We know that Brett loves to run, loves to jack threes. But this team doesn't really lend itself to being that being their strengths. Do you think it changes up, or are we wrong? Is it still a strength of theirs to run and jack threes?
This, to me, is the question of the season, Bobby, and I am fascinated by this. I wrote a column a couple of years ago heading into, I think, the 2015-16 season, before when they just had drafted Ben Simmons and before he had gotten hurt and we knew he was going to miss the season. They had a ton of big guys on that team, right? That Embiid was finally going to play. They still had Okafor and Nerlens Noel and Saric and Dario Saric and Simmons. And I wrote about this saying, you know, what if they throw a lineup out there with, you know, 4 out of 5 guys or 5 out of 5 guys who are 6'10"? Can you imagine the defense that they could play? Well, they're going to approach that kind of this season, you know, with the exception of Tobias Harris and to a degree Joel Embiid when he's hanging on the perimeter, who are the shooters in that starting lineup? But they're going to be huge. You know, Simmons is 6'10", Horford is 6'10", Embiid is 7'2". You know, Richardson is what, 6'6"?
6'6", yeah.
Yeah, Tobias Harris is 6'6". 6'7". So, you know, are they going to be able to shoot enough in the contemporary NBA to keep up with a team like the Warriors? That I don't know, but I'm also really curious to see what their defense looks like and whether they are their length and their speed at certain positions and certainly their size on the back line can counteract what other teams are trying to do. To answer your question, I don't think we're going to see them jack up as many threes as we did, you know, the previous two seasons, but maybe we see something that nobody has anticipated.
Do you see them getting Kyle Korver? Speaking of threes, he would be a guy to help out in that regard.
If they can get him for the league minimum, I would.
Okay.
You know, terrific locker room guy, you know, provides a skill set that they, you know, everybody seems to acknowledge that they need. Fan favorite in Philadelphia, has played in big games, you know, has been teammates with superstars and knows how to how to play alongside them and deal with them, has all the experience. I don't think there would be a downside to bringing in Korver.
Speaking with Mike Sielski from theinquirer.com. So, Mike, the other thing that we're talking about youth-wise with this team is Matisse Thybulle and how he's playing in the summer league. The thing that jumps out to me, he's got great instincts, great anticipation playing the game. We know he can play above the rim. What have been your early impressions of him so far in summer league?
Same thing. Yeah. Same impression. You know, you talk to him, you listen to him speak, a really intelligent kid. You know, I think that they clearly seemed to me wanted a profile of how they wanted to kind of try to build this team, at least now. You know, you get defensive-minded, hard-nosed guys. And the other thing we have to keep in mind is that they've had some success, not with Ben Simmons, but with other players, in taking guys who were not regarded as great shooters and improving them. If you look at Dario Saric, right, the big concern with Dario when he entered the league was, can he shoot the three? Can he shoot from the outside? Well, his second year, full season in the NBA, he was a 40% three-point shooter. Now, is some of that born of him getting open looks because Joel Embiid's on the floor? Yeah, probably. But Joel Embiid's still going to be on the floor. And Al Horford can shoot a little bit from the outside. And you have Tobias Harris. And, you know, maybe there is something within the Sixers that can coach, you know, a guy like Thybulle or a guy like Zaire Smith over time to be able to shoot it well. So, you know, like I said, I'm fascinated by how this is going to look next season, particularly because they need immediate contributions from their young players.
Mike, how do you take James Ennis telling your colleague there at the Inquirer, Keith Pompey, that the Sixers are going to walk through the Eastern Conference on their way to the NBA Finals?
I admire his confidence.
No. The first part of that was great. The first part of that was phenomenal.
I admire his confidence. I think, look, they were a really good team last year that, you know, you wonder if they had had more time to kind of marinate together with Butler and Harris after the big trades. If they had played more together, would there have been more cohesion? And would that have led them past Toronto in that second round? And if Embiid had not gotten sick. But I think the idea that they're going to walk through the East is a bit of wishful thinking. I think they're really good. I think they're one of the two or three best teams in the conference, just like they were last year. I think it's going to be a little bit different, but unless James knows something that the rest of us don't, you know, you still have Milwaukee looking pretty tough. You don't know, it looks like Brooklyn's going to take a step forward. You know, there may be another team that kind of emerges. Indiana may have refortified itself a little bit, so we'll see.
All right, Mike, switch hats here. We'll go to the Phillies. And a two-part question. One, where they are right now, are you disappointed in where they are? Is this where you expected them to be? And looking to this second, so-called second half of the season, how do you see it playing out?
I'm a little disappointed, but not necessarily surprised. You know, I did expect the back half of the rotation, the younger arms, to take more of a step forward than they have. I expected more from Nick Pivetta and Zach Eflin. You know, when Eflin is good, man, he's really, really good. But when he's bad, he gets hammered. And Pivetta, everybody knows that he's been up and down and mostly down. So, but by the same token, I do think that the narrative that they went all in by making all these moves, and if it doesn't work out this season, they got to make more moves, is ridiculous for a couple of reasons. Number one, they're kind of committed to some of these guys for at least the short term. You know, they're going to re-sign. They want to sign JT Realmuto to a longer-term contract, and he's already under their control through next season. You know, Bryce Harper isn't going anywhere. Reese Hoskins isn't going anywhere. And, you know, Andrew McCutchen is going to be here two more years once he gets healthy. Scott Kingery isn't going anywhere. The idea that if it doesn't work this year, there's a major, major problem. Well, not necessarily. I don't think Matt Klentak viewed it as an all-in kind of year. And it doesn't preclude them from, you know, in the offseason, adding pieces and getting better. Now, with respect to the rest of the season, I would not, you know, make a major trade that would cause, you know, the organization to sacrifice a major prospect. I don't believe they will, nor do I think they should trade Alec Bohm. You know, they have already done some of that. They moved 6-0 Sanchez to get JT Realmuto. And their farm system was so barren for so long that I don't believe they're in a position right now to be able to say, hey, let's go for it. You know, we were disappointing in the first half, but we just need a piece or two. I don't think they need just a piece or two. I think they need more than that. Yeah. And I don't think they're in a position to make that move anyway.
Thanks for coming on, man.
Thanks, guys.
97.5 The Fanatic.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.